So with that, I will call our final case on the calendar today, which is a 24-1789 in re custody of AL, or Larson v. Minsk. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning.
So you're the only person that's arguing today. I want to just reintroduce the panel for your benefit. My name is Elizabeth Bentley, and I'll be presiding today. And I'm joined by Judge Elise Larson and Judge Denise Riley. So just a couple of quick housekeeping matters. The time clock should be visible if you have your settings on gallery view. Are you able to see that?
Let's see here. Yes.
Okay, good. And you can hide any other non-video folks if you just so it's not too cluttered. Then please obviously keep your video on during the entirety of the argument. And as far as the timing, you'll be given 15 minutes for your argument today. We don't have counsel for respondent arguing here, so the 15 minutes will be the entirety of your argument. And before you begin, please identify yourself and your client for the record. And you may go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Justices. My name is JC Johnston. I am an attorney licensed in Minnesota and North Dakota and a native of Crookston, Minnesota. I am representing my client, Cyan Kaiser, in this matter that took place up in Roseau County, Minnesota. I know that you are acquainted with the facts, so I'll get into the argument about the district court not conducting an in-camera review and indicating that if my client called the child to testify, it would be construed against her.
So I have two questions for you.
Okay.
When you have your table of contents and you outline your four arguments, you say that the district court erred in each of those four ways. I
Yes.
think the standard of review for us is abuse of discretion.
Okay.
Do you agree with that?
For all four points.
Yes.
And you're saying the briefing, I can pull it up, indicated something different.
Yeah, that the district court erred in its treatment, erred in relying, and erred by not considering. But I think the standard of review for us is abuse of discretion.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay. And then my second question to you is you say that, Mother argues that the district court discouraged her from calling her daughter as a witness by stating that such testimony would be construed against her. I'm wondering, I couldn't find that in the record. Can you help me out with that?
Sure. Let me pull up the brief. Okay. I'm just looking at the construed. It doesn't look it was sent cited to the transcript, but I'll find that quick for you.
Thank you, because we couldn't find it in the transcript either, so.
I guess maybe just more fundamentally about that point. You know, the court here seemed to understand AL's preference and consider that preference, but nonetheless found that it was in her best interest not to continue to reside with mom. So I guess I'm just kind of wondering, even if your point that it should have held an in-camera hearing where it probably would have learned that what her preference was more directly or had her testify, why would that have changed the outcome here where the district court seemed to know that and consider it?
Well, I think There's a lot of moving pieces with this case, and that's one of my problems. We have two dads in two different counties represented by the same attorney continually going after my client, trying to get custody away from her in Pennington County of the two younger kids, Roseau County of the older child. I think that, due to the age of this child, the inexperience of the parent investigator, and also, the judge pretty much just adopting the parent investigator report. It's all a totality of circumstances that weighs in on an abuse of discretion. For instance, the parent investigator admitted she included hearsay in her report. She admitted that she didn't have supporting or corroborating evidence to support some of the statements that were said. She included res judicata in her report. She said that she had litigated one case in Minnesota. In totality, she didn't understand the difference between the best interest and the endangerment. And, when you have a 14-year-old daughter, and I had one daughter, so I have some personal experience in this. Their whole lives are at 14. To take this child and to throw her into a different school, a different community, take away her interests without the willingness of the court to even meet with her and determine her maturity, just to simply say, well, yeah, okay, sure, she prefers to stay with mom. I don't think that that's allowing the system to work. And case in point, we weren't told that the child would be prohibited from doing an in-camera review or being allowed to testify. And if we would have recognized that the parent investigator was going to be tasked with making that determination, things probably would have flowed differently. I have a practice.
It's my understanding that your client stipulated to that particular evaluator's appointment.
Well, we were, I mean, here's another rub on that. We're severely limited up here of the people that will do them and of the people that are willing to do them. And it's a person with a license. That doesn't mean she's not subject to cross-examination on her work, and it doesn't mean that she's given a pass from using inadmissible evidence to make a determination. Further,
Except that the statute permits the parenting evaluator to talk to people and to look at records, which would be hearsay, right?
yeah, and I mean, when I do investigations, sure, there's those pieces that are hearsay, but that doesn't prohibit an investigator from understanding, especially an attorney investigator, the rules of evidence. You can't just that's why your reports are subject to cross-examination, right? Because if you're including hearsay, if you don't have credible evidence, those are things that destroy your report. Your job when you're doing thousands of dollars of investigation is to flush out these issues for the court. And when you haven't done a good job of it, the court shouldn't just rubber stamp it and say, oh, yeah, it was thorough, so I'm just going to accept it. It's still subject to court rules and rules of evidence. And so that's one of my issues when you're including all of these things that aren't from credible evidence that could be tainted, that's when the investigator is supposed to dig in and make sure that those findings that they're putting in the report are supported by credible evidence. And this investigator did not do, she didn't do that.
May I
And she
ask you another question then about the child not testifying? So it seems that through other means, the record was pretty complete about how invested she was with her dance team or classes, pom-pom, and her friends and all of that. I'm just wondering, and that she wanted to stay with mom. I'm wondering what other facts she would have said to the judge that aren't included, because it was pretty clear that her preference was her mother.
Well, I don't think she likes her stepmom at all. I don't think she feels that her stepmom treats her fairly. There's younger kids in the home that take priority over her. And that's reflected in the record. I mean, her dance classes were cut at least in half because now there's a burden of transporting her, and dad has daycare for the younger kids. Stepmom has to work early in the morning. And so all of those things have really dramatically affected this child's life. Simple things like grades. Did the parent investigator follow up with the school? Did she see if there was unrecorded homework? Did she reach out to the dance instructor? A lot of these things weren't done. She relied primarily on information supplied by two dads out to cook the same mother and represented by the same attorney. I don't think this child's voice was heard at all. And
District court seemed to be concerned about mother's current live-in boyfriend and his criminal past and his character.
you. I don't, was that finding specifically from the judge, or was it her adopt?
And now you're putting me on the spot. I think it was in the judge's order.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I guess, there's one thing to say, like, I've got concerns about this, but where's the credible evidence to support it? It's the district court's job to hear the evidence and to weigh it. I didn't hear any evidence, and none was presented that this relationship was of any harm to the child, that this person was any harm to any child. And that's one of my big problems with this case is, what do you have to support the underlying findings? You're having an inexperienced lawyer that was perhaps influenced. Perhaps, admittedly included hearsay, make these determinations, and the court adopting them like they were made by some expert. If your parentification is like a pretty serious thing, and how can you have no expert and all of a sudden just conclude this happened based on a report of an inexperienced parent investigator who doesn't understand all of Minnesota law, and relied on hearsay and other evidentiary errors, like res judicata, and not having cooperating evidence. And so again, it comes down to a totality that, number one, it was an error. Why didn't the district court meet with this child? And maybe we wouldn't even be here. Maybe she would have found she was insufficient. But maybe she would have gleaned a lot of things like, hey, my stepmom doesn't like me. I don't like living in that house. They don't treat me the same. I don't want to switch my schools. And again, 14-year-old girls, I mean, that's a critical development age for kids to try to be dropped in another community and to start over again. So I'm looking in totality of all of these things, and I feel like we didn't get a fair shake.
The judge also seemed to be concerned that your client thwarted the relationship with the father by scheduling pom-pom and other things, by letting her current live-in boyfriend do the daughter-dad dance, by excluding her biological father who wants a relationship with her. And she found that your client did not support that relationship or do what she needed to do to help with co-parenting.
Here's the thing. I think that, unfortunately, in these ages, a lot of these kids have stepdads and they have stepmoms. And at 14 years old, if a child wants to pick year to year who she wants to take to the dance for the dad-daughter dance, I mean, I think that the child should have some input into who she feels close. To me, that's another representation that she doesn't feel close to bio dad. He wasn't involved in the first 7 years of her life. He voluntarily quit his parenting time for months upon request of child, you know? And so why is that my mom, or why is that my client's fault that bio dad stepped back and he didn't file any motion to compel? And he didn't take any action to get his parenting time back. He didn't go to therapy with a child. He didn't do a lot of things, but yet now that shifts and it's my client's fault. You know, he has some responsibility to maintain a decent relationship with the child, and his conduct at the fair is what drove the relationship apart. And so I just feel that, you know, we didn't get a fair shake. I see my time is running out. But again, when you have a 14-year-old child who's not selecting her father, I think it shows that there's other issues going on here that needed to be considered.
You counsel for your argument. That will conclude this matter. The case will be submitted and we'll issue a decision in the time prescribed by statute.
Thank you
Thank
so
you again
much.
for your time today. And that concludes our oral calendar this morning. So the court is adjourned.